your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me this evening is Tony Godling from Bristol, England. Welcome, Tony, to our program.
All right, thanks, George.
Boy, there's a lot going on out there. We've had this Nikki Haley pronouncement from the UN stating she's hardline against Russia. What has happening to Trump's administration, this foreign policy here?
Now, I hate to say it, but it's looking increasingly to me, and I mean, I did have this idea a little bit beforehand.
Okay.
For the presidential election. But you know what? You know, it's the permanent government is in charge. They're not going to let anything really change, and it looks to me as if Trump is a kind of useful guy to have as a front man, but he's going to be told to say whatever it is they want him to say. And I'm a bit worried that he is the sort of guy who would, you know, even be behind some kind of slightly outrageous actions to do with foreign policy, and he would then defend them. So I don't honestly think, I don't know what you make of this, George, whether he's really in charge. I think the people behind the scenes, the CIA, they always, of course, like to stay in charge. The generals, they like to stay in charge. And the bankers, the Goldman Sachs types, they like to stay in charge. They're all buddies down at the Council on Foreign Relations. And they're all the very, very best of pals. They all have the same attitude, which is that the US, in order to stay strong, to stay great, has got to have an aggressive, hawkish attitude towards the rest of the world. They've got to be constantly stealing bits of territory here and there, and I'm afraid that the days of them stealing territory in places like Ukraine and in Syria are starting to become numbered, and this is why I think we've had some violent protests in the US. I think what's going on is because US foreign policy has been blocked in places like Ukraine and Syria, that these guys are now turning their attention on new domestic American population. You know, they're saying, well, look, let's go for a few soft targets because we know we can beat them, because they've come up against the Putin judo throws in various other parts of the world.
Right. You know, we've got a very aggressive policy, foreign policy, and Nikki Haley, her first address, not yesterday but before, to the UN, was that we're going to take names. You know what I mean? If you're not with us on some of these issues, we're going to take names. You know, I mean, what kind of an attitude is that?
Well, I think it's a bit of a small town attitude. Like,
yes,
you know,
it is. Yes, it is.
You've got
bully. It's a bullying attitude.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Exactly. Yeah.
On the international diplomatic stage, George, I don't think it's going to go down very well.
No,
it
didn't.
Only end in tears. Particularly this Sean Spicer guy. I'm afraid I've ended up laughing at him pretty much straight away. I mean, I don't know who it is that decides that they're going to appoint these people, and whether they're appointed on purpose to be like comedy figures, or else that they're supposed to be seriously representing what the US position is on something, because he has just been lying. He's been giving fake news after fake news out. First of all, saying that that the US has been a US naval warship was attacked by the Iranians, when actually it wasn't. He very quietly under his breath, and I don't know if you've heard the clip, mumbles, "Oh yeah, okay, it was the Saudis," but you know, and he doesn't really seem to realise just how dangerous it is to announce on the world stage that the Iran has conducted an act of war against the United States, but actually, of course, the Pentagon have confirmed that's just a lie. It never happened. Now, this is dangerous, as Glenn Greenwald and The Intercept down in Brazil have pointed out, which, by the way, is one of the go-to sites. I think, you know, some of the best information in the world, the Snowden revelations and all that kind of stuff, been coming out through there. He is pointing out just how this is how the Vietnam War started. You know, this is a dangerous thing to do. You cannot be the president's spokesperson and say that a U.S. warship's been attacked when it hasn't. You can't make stuff like that up.
No, because you're being looked at by millions of people from all over the world now,
and
right? And they're saying what?
Making a laughing stock of the White House.
That's it. When you make a statement in that press room there, you better be right on top of it, right?
Definitely. Also, the other big mistake was Sean Spicer is putting his foot in it left, right, and center. He was talking about the attack on the Quebec mosque last weekend.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I mean, we can talk about that more if you want, because we had Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister, saying, we will welcome, this is just after the Trump's Muslim travel ban.
Okay.
His travel ban was announced, which, by the way, you know, he that's what he campaigned on.
Right.
So who can say you shouldn't be doing it? Of course, you know, I don't agree with it personally, but, you know, this is what the guy campaigned on. But anyway, Trudeau then reacted by saying, well, we will give safe haven to any refugees, and if you can't get into America, we'll look after you here. And then the next day, what happens? Crash bang wallop, a far-right lunatic who is described by Sean Spicer as a Moroccan, which he wasn't, you know, has attacked a mosque. Now, this is the sort of fake news or spin and lies that I'm afraid the White House is going to have to check its facts before it starts opening its mouth to the world like that.
Right. The immigration, it was not organized, okay? You need to call in the Border Patrol and the Customs and all the and State Department people, and you've got to plan out this. You've got to put out there, in my opinion, a cutoff on the visas, and you have to say visas issued after this date are still going to be honored. You know what I mean? And so forth. But it was never done that way. You know?
Look, George, but he campaigned on this ban, right? As far as
that's okay, but
people voted for the ban.
Yeah.
He's quite the news rights to institute the ban.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned. The only thing is, of course, he's got it wrong. If he wants to stop terrorists getting into his country, he should be banning particularly dual US Israeli citizens. You have a look at some of the people who are the most in line for being behind the cover-up, the subsequent cover-up, and the 9/11 attacks themselves. There's a very good article out there called 9/11 Israel Did It. All the truth in the world. In fact,
you can find it
on the WikiSpooks site, which, of course, is one of those sites which the CIA and the BBC say is fake news. But actually, the article itself is fully referenced at the bottom. It's got almost as big a load of references to the facts that are in the article, you know, where you can source everything, as the article itself. And if Trump really wanted to, stop any kind of interference in U.S. foreign policy, he should be pointing his fingers firmly at Israel.
Right. I see Kissinger behind the scenes in there. He did meet with Trump in New York.
Well,
somebody suggested that to me, one of my friends the other day. They said they see the hand of Henry Kissinger in some of this stuff. Huh? Does that make sense?
I think the biggest protection racket in the world is run out of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York, with Henry Kissinger at the helm.
Right.
What he does is he will go to some little tiny country, he'll pay a load of mercenaries to go and kill a load of people there, and maybe burn a few villages. What do you think? Maybe let's have a go at that. And then what happens is, obviously the people in that country are trying to stop this happening. And so they go to the United Nations, they go to the various embassies, nothing happens. And they get out their $1 million checkbook, or credit card as it is nowadays, probably a microchip in their hand or something, and they go
to
see Henry Kissinger. Here's $1 million, Henry. And Henry says, okay, I'll see you now. And he says, yes, it's such a shame what's happening in your country. If you want to change it, you know, this is what you need to do. And then they start to have to pay attention to Henry. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, that Henry Kissinger does all this personally himself, but he's certainly been behind some of the most horrific acts in history, particularly the horrible coup in Chile, the coup in Indonesia, the invasion of Cyprus. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, there's something like 30,000 people disappeared in Chile after the Pinochet takeover. You know, and of course there were Nazis up in the Andes running Colonia Dignidad, which was torturing people under the Henry Kissinger Pinochet Chile regime. So the guy is culpable, even though there are some countries that he's not allowed to visit. Yes, I see his hand very much in, particularly in the apparent problems with Iran and China. Now, of course, Kissinger is working very closely with the Israelis. He's, you know, and it seems to me that this coming conflict in the Middle East between Iran and Israel is really seriously being stoked by Trump on both sides.
And the problem with it, Trump's going for it. That's a problem.
Well, I mean, he's a bit ignorant, I think, about the reality.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit naive on some of this foreign policy, already being pressured to do it, right?
He's surrounded himself with people who are just going to lie to him.
I know. That's what we've got
Goldman Sachs there.
I know. There's too many Goldman Sachs there. Yeah.
They're not very trustworthy.
They surrounded him.
He's stoking the Israeli side.
Right, right, exactly. Well, Netanyahu.
By talking about moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Right, right.
That's what the Zionists want, of course, because it would, potentially forever put an end to the proper settlement in that part of the world, which meant that East Jerusalem should be Arab.
Right.
Anyway, so there's that side, but it's also the attacks on Iran. Quite clearly, the orders around the White House are find anything you can on Iran, and it's almost like having a bunch of gangsters running things, you know.
Right. Where
I mean, I'm not saying it was very different under Obama. It was maybe a little bit more, shall we say, a bit more subtle. Although, of course, his kill list and the drone killings weren't very subtle. That's what I think we're getting. Anyone that can find anything on Iran, let me know, and then we'll just run it out around the world's press. Now, this is not a very mature way to behave, and it's actually a way. You know, again, we were talking earlier on about this whole idea of the Intercept article pointing out that as
we the Intercept got some pretty good information in there at times. I've been looking at that myself.
But they're pointing out the Gulf of Tonkin. This is how that started. You know, I think that there is a flippancy about these kinds of war initiating statements and ideas coming from the White House now, which, you know, is pretty shocking, pretty scary. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton would have been any better or Donald Trump, but the fact of the matter is, I think Hillary stole the election from Bernie Sanders for Donald Trump. And the elite know that. Very few people in the rest of the world seem to understand that, you know, Clinton and Trump actually effectively were working together because they're both part of the same Council on Foreign Relations, Goldman Sachs elite.
Yeah, is there any evidence out there that Trump has obligations to Russian banks? Have you heard that, or Dutch bank? I've heard that before. Is that valid or not?
I'm not sure about his business connections to Russia. I know that he does have a lot. Also, I think Rex Tillerson is the man to watch on all this, and he seems to be quite friendly with the Russians. So I think what's happening is that you'll get a slow settling down of policy of some sort. What is bothering me is about this time last week, George, there was an article in The Independent, which is an online paper. We can't get it as a newspaper here in Britain anymore. But The Independent was saying that the Chinese are moving their ballistic missiles up to, and I think we mentioned this last week, up towards the US. Now, there's inflaming the tensions with China is just crazy.
Yeah, that South China Sea
thing.
Why
are they doing that?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that? There's no, you know, this just seems to me.
Well, it looks like this administration is attacking, going after Iran and China and the Ukraine, Russia, Russia.
Almost like a bunch of psychopaths, that they can't see that they have got to sort their own domestic situation out, and they can't do that. They're not prepared to do that, so they're just kind of lashing out abroad. Quite a dangerous spot to be in.
Well, this economy is going to take a while to turn it around anyway. See what I mean? And all indications right now are that our retail sales are way off. There's companies closing here. you know, chain stores.
Listen, Lowe's the same wants to happen all across the Western world.
Yeah, home builders anticipate 15,000 to 20,000 cuts on in their workforce.
Well, the same sort of things happen all over the Western world, George.
Right,
we need to get grip of this money system. We can't allow private banks to be running the whole show. The most important thing to look at, if you look at all the infrastructure in your country, the most important thing, really, I know it sounds trite, it's not the water system or the electricity system, it's the cash system, the cash point system, the little teller things where you press your money, you press your numbers in, you get your money out of the bank.
Right, right.
Without that, the country doesn't have any infrastructure. If you can't buy and sell stuff in a capitalist country, you're stuck. That kind of important infrastructure, I think, just like gas, water, electricity, all that sort of thing, needs to be in public hands. It needs to be managed by people who are accountable to the public. It shouldn't be some kind of little private racket. And that's actually how it's all wound up. Now, I'm a bit of a socialist. I'm not 100% socialist. I just think that infrastructure needs to be in public hands, and it needs to be run by people who are accountable to us. And provided, it needs to be provided at cost. Yeah, so they're not trying to make a profit out of it. They're doing it in an open way so that we can actually get on
with it. They're making a fortune out of that money, dispensing. Stiglitz at World Economic Forum a couple of weeks ago was talking about cashless society for America.
That's definitely on the cards, isn't it?
Yeah, they want there pushing.
Well,
big time.
I was joking about going to see Henry Kissinger with the microchip in your hand.
Right,
but that is the way we're heading. You know,
you can't get in to see him without a microchip.
That's right. Right. I only have microchips.
Yeah, it's got to be in the head though, right between the eyes.
you mean you've got one too, George?
Yeah. Oh God, I love my microchip.
Look, I mean,
wrote a whole song about it, Tony.
Did you?
I love my microchip. Oh yes, I do.
Well, anyway, so that is the way they want us all. Nobody's voted on this. Nobody's decided. This is the banking elite that have decided this is the way we're going to run things. Look, I mean, I'm seeing it more and more like George Orwell, which is Animal Farm, the people farm.
Yeah? Right, right.
So you've got a few farmers that are farming the little people, and they want them to go into the little farming sheds. They want them to go out and eat a bit of grass, come back, and then eventually they're going to sell them. Yeah, or stick them on a treadmill, make them generate a little bit of power for them. You know, like a little hamster cage.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I think that is the attitude you've got. These people are so completely sealed off from the rest of us that they have their own little society of their own mates, their own friends. Obviously, there are quite a lot of very, very decent people in between, in the middle, who have maybe, you know, got some jobs off of these types. But it's almost worth, I think, thinking about where society is going. You know, you're going to have in the future, you're going to have these elite people who have got no kind of real sense of humanity with the rest of us. So they just see themselves as the leaders that just say what's going to happen. They pontificate on everything. They don't have to listen to us because they're the elite. Then you've got a kind of bunch of middle managers who just suck up to them, who really don't have much of a mind of their own. They're kind of soulless, but they're prepared to sell their souls to the elite in order to get their daily bread and get somewhere to live, etc. Then you've got, I suppose, below that, or above it, depending on what your point of view is.
Right.
You've then got a sort of almost like a worker bee mentality of people who don't like it all, are fed up with it, but they've got to just do it to survive. And then the very extreme, you've got the rebels, people who have just decided, no, I'm having nothing to do with this. I'm going to destroy this system if I possibly can.
The anarchist, almost, right?
Well, yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? You can understand people having that mentality nowadays because the system seems to be set up in a totally topsy-turvy way where the taxes are falling increasingly in the West on the poorest people, and the rich are allowed to get away. Isn't it? Am I right in thinking Nevada is going to be a tax haven? Is that right?
Oh, gosh, yeah, man.
The greatest tax haven in the world, apparently, and everywhere, all the other tax havens are going to be closed down, but Las Vegas is going to be where all the tax exiles can
There's so much going on out there, and you know what? I've been out there three or four times, and it's unimaginable. If a billboard needs 10,000 lights to light it up, they'll put 100,000 lights behind the billboard. You know what I mean? It's just way overdone. You know what I mean?
It's like Babylon.
You know, right, exactly. Yeah, you know, and it's all money and it's cold. And if you walk into a casino, it feels almost like a trampoline. There's so much cushion underneath the carpet. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm exaggerating. But, I mean, it's like that. You know what I mean? And gaudy, if you want to see something gaudy, go out there. They're tasteless decorations sometimes.
Yeah, I think it sounds a bit kitsch for me. I think I'll go to the Vienna Art Gallery instead.
Well, you need to come over to the U.S. I'll take you out to Vegas sometime and show you around. It's fun to be there just to mess around.
Yeah. George, last time I was in the U.S., I went up to the Foxwoods place over in, gosh, where is that? That's in New England somewhere.
Okay.
Massachusetts. I think it was in Massachusetts or maybe just
Boston area maybe or something.
In Maine. It was an Indian reservation. So this is why, when obviously you can do gambling on the reservation.
Oh, yeah. Our Native Americans.
It was enormous. It was about a mile long with a big hotel at each end of it.
Okay.
And all I could see was white Americans putting money into slots and giving loads and loads and loads of money through gambling to the Indians, which was great. And they were investing it all in their wonderful Pequot Museum.
Right.
Which was all about the history of, you know, I think it was around the Pilgrim Fathers' time where Pequot tribe was tricked by the English and conned, and a lot of them were killed at the time of the, when Cabot came over there from Bristol.
I see.
So this whole, I think it's almost running its course, this system of capitalism. And actually, you know, if you really, really think about it and look at what's going on, in 2008, when they bailed out all those banks, George, I was looking at the figures just again the other day.
Yeah.
About £750 billion in London was spent on bailing out the banks. Now, that's a lot of...
Oh, man, that is a lot.
£750 billion, that's probably over $1 trillion,
right,
was spent on bailing out these broke institutions. Now, at that time, they should have gone bust. They should have been allowed to go back. It would have been very bad for a lot of people who had deposits, etc. But that is the way capitalism should work. So capitalism has been dead, really, since 2008. By bailing out those banks, what they did is they started on the heroin, yeah? They started on this kind of heroin injection, which they've been having ever since.
Right.
Printing money, quantitative easing.
Quantitative easing. And that's
where they are today. They're heroin addicts, effectively.
Yeah,
and
right.
The patient has turned into a zombie.
A man told me one time, it's like pushing the one end of the string, but the other end of the string won't move.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And they pumped up all this in 2008, and today the debt is worse than it's ever been.
Although I think that there is actually quite a lot of positive feeling in Britain about Brexit and negative feeling in Europe amongst the elite, but ordinary people think, well, it's about time too that this concentration of power was stopped. Also worth mentioning that we've got a bit of a split developing between the EU and the United States, haven't we, with Donald Trump this week.
Well, are they protesting about his visit to England sometime or not?
Well, no, Donald Tusk was saying that the United States, actually pointing the finger at Trump specifically, is as great a threat, is an existential threat to the European Union as much as Putin and his tanks.
Oh my gosh.
So there is, it's a little bit of,
Haven't let up. They're still attacking him.
The hand of friendship needs to be reached out to the European Union in Brussels. This is a symptom, really, I think, of people who are part of an elite, George.
Right.
They've spent decades worming their way to the top, climbing the greasy pole on the gravy train, the ladder, whatever you want to call it.
Pole dancers.
they don't have any real touch with the real world. And so they've suddenly, their chickens have come home to roost. You know, this is not going to carry on anymore.
Right.
That seems to me, you know, the long and short of it, what's been happening in Europe. Because it's quite clear, a lot of the French population, I wouldn't necessarily say more than about maybe 50, 60%, but certainly potentially a majority of both the French and German populations have had enough of the EU. So we're in a time of great change, and maybe with this year and the possible cyber war, you know, because we keep getting hints from the elite, particularly from the Bilderbergs,
right,
about the cyber war. And I mentioned last week, I think, that the Bilderberg is going to be in Chantilly this year, it looks like.
Yeah, yeah, you said that Westfield's there, yeah.
Yeah, so with the cyber war, I've come up with I don't know whether you call it handy, but it's a sort of checklist, really, for people to prepare for a cyber war. First of all, your passwords.
Okay. Yeah?
Make sure you've got sensible passwords. Have all your main, you know, security, things like your banking.
Right.
Have separate passwords, yeah? So, and make them fairly complicated passwords with silly letters.
Sure, upper and lower case.
Don't type them out. Write them down on a good old-fashioned piece of paper with a good old-fashioned pen.
Right.
And don't photocopy them either, because photocopying can be digitally scanned and remotely viewed and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's quite a few of these. I've got a list somewhere. I'm not sure if I've got it handy. But, I mean, these are the sort of things you need to do. And try and get a firewall is another one. Also, in your email accounts, if you can have a paid-for email account, that's always better than having one of these free Yahoo googly ones. And it's also a good idea to have an email account which is just used for spam. So when someone is annoyingly say, oh, you've got to give me your email, give them the rubbish one. So that you,
right,
you never, give it the one you never look at, you know, that you can use it to check to say, yes, this is me, but you never really bother to look at and keep a separate personal account. That's what many, many people. Now, it's a lot of these tips I've got from the youngsters, George, because they're pretty savvy when it comes to.
Yeah, some of those young people know about this cyber security stuff.
Yeah. Also, yeah. Do your backups, folks. Yeah.
Oh yeah, backup now. Yeah.
Go and get a 2 terabyte drive or something, a 3 terabyte drive, and plug it in and just copy everything.
I've got a 4 terabyte right here on this computer I'm using now on this connection.
You see, if you've got your stuff backed up somewhere, at least, you know, you're not going to, if your hard drive or your computer gets hacked and messed with from the outside, at least you've got it somewhere, your data somewhere separate, you know, so you've got a certain amount of safety there and a bit, and keep your stuff. There's nothing worse than losing loads of work, you know.
Oh, so, and I've got another recommendation. So that we don't lose ourselves, get chipped. get chipped.
You know what?
That way you can't get lost that way, right?
I was walking in the country in Gloucestershire the other day, and there's a big sign saying, lost dog, lost a week ago here, and it's got a chip. But we still can't find it. So if you think by getting your dog chip is going to help you find it, forget it. Yes.
But I can use GPS to go places, right?
Yeah, but your dog is going the other direction, George.
Oh, man. Good day. Hey, Tony, anything else good going on over there in Mary England?
I just think, you know, yes, there's the fake news. If you're interested in, we've put together, I think, one of the definitive lists around the world of the really best of fake news. Well, they can't call it fake news, but I'm talking about the sites which have got the best well-checked information. The Intercept is one of them.
Okay.
I mean, but these are other ones I've got which are on the list of the CIA and the BBC that they've been circulating of so-called fake news websites. Worth pointing out that Angela Merkel, and this whole term fake news came from Merkel and Obama when Obama was over in Berlin on the 17th of November. They announced this, you know, we must do something about the scourge of fake news.
Two days
after Google released their fake news app. Yeah? I'm saying, well, hang on a minute. You guys are just doing PR for Google.
Right.
Yeah? They've just launched their app. 2 days later, on the international news, Merkel and Obama are launching it for them. You know, saying everyone needs to be worried about this. Get your fake news app. So,
Yeah,
these websites are to be found on our show page. Okay. You can download our MP3s from our radio shows there as well. We did a load of stuff on Ukraine tonight, a load of stuff on the national, the wonderful, the beautiful National Health Service, which the Conservatives over here are trying to destroy. It's the best health service anywhere in the world, created out of the ashes of the Blitz of World War II by a 1945 Labour government. Brilliant health service. But the Tories are doing their best to destroy it so that these big private healthcare companies can come in and demand insurance payments from people in order to get treatment. And so that's the, we also had a good look at, the Ukraine particularly and the, whole situation that's developing there, which seems to, seems to have sparked off. I mean, there is obviously a counter move against Trump and his trying to be friendly to Russia. There are other forces within NATO who don't want that, yeah, so they're almost trying to force the hand. I think that's what's been happening in Ukraine with the shelling of civilian areas in the Donbass region this week.
Well, Nikki Haley tied the Crimea to the sanctions. She said no, the sanctions won't be lifted because of Crimea.
Why doesn't she ask to have a referendum in Crimea?
Yeah,
the Crimean people want.
She made statements that were not feasible, period, for anybody.
She's talking nonsense. And how long can she carry on talking nonsense?
I don't know. Her statement did not make sense, what I'm saying.
Yeah, so anyway, you can go to our webpage, which is thisweek.org.uk, and you'll find on there our special site, George. I'm sure you'll have a look yourself, which is called Diamonds in the Cesspool.
Diamonds in the cesspool? What are you talking about?
You come up with more interesting headlines.
You know,
that is the bunch of websites where you can get real news. So you can find out what's really going on in the world. For example, one of them is, one of my favorites is globalresearch.ca, run by Michel.
I met him up in Canada and Toronto.
In Ottawa, I think, isn't he? I don't know, but anyway. So there are several sites like that.
Right.
There's Justin Raimondo's antiwar.com, which is also very good. Although he's not a 9/11 truther, his website is brilliant, I think, on keeping tabs on global events. All these, of course, are on these CIA lists of fake news. I mean, for me, it's an ironic title, Diamonds in the Cesspool, because the mainstream media is the cesspool. And as the Saker said, The warfare nowadays is 80% information warfare, 80% psychological warfare. So that's what's happening with fake news, is they're trying to just discredit the real truth, and they're failing, I think.
I see it tied back to Pizzagate myself too, you know, the concept. Because I tie it back to the false memory syndrome. You remember that? False memory?
Yeah.
What happened there was that your pedophiles that were pulled into court created as a defense a false memory concept, okay, to say basically that young children could not accurately remember these events, okay? And they also said, they said that psychologists were preying on these kids and putting those kinds of ideas in their heads about these abuse events.
Yeah, but I mean, look, getting back to some of this geopolitics, I want to ask you, George, what do you think Trump's real position on NATO is? Because it's funny, last week he was saying NATO was obsolete. Suddenly he gets a visit from Theresa May and he says, oh, no, NATO is the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, she's looking over at him and saying he's 100% behind NATO when she was saying that, at the press conference. I'm thinking Kissinger or some of these people surrounding him are pressuring him to come around to more of a conventional way of thinking about the and traditional in the past, like they've always done. I don't know.
That's what it looks like to me. Anyway, I mean, I think the best way to leave it really is to look at, I think, the slow progress towards Brexit being a fairly positive thing. We're looking here, I mean, people in Britain don't want us to become the 51st state of the United States instead. So there's the irony, isn't it? We're saying no to Brussels, is this enormous monstrosity, which is totally anti-democratic,
right.
And that means that we might become more under the wing of Washington, which we don't want either, you know. So, as usual, the politicians are trying everything they can to get the better of us and to you know, create another racket that the people
to treat it. To trick us to make us delusional. Yeah, keep us delusional.
Yeah. So So what you're doing is you're setting up a whole lot of bugbears. People react against one, and then they're driven into the arms of the next bugbear.
That's
you know, it's
right.
Almost like when you say, you know, this president was terrible. So the next one's going to be noxious, and the one after that is going to be psychopath. You know.
Well, now, what it does? There's energy out there because of hatred and resentment in populations at large, and they can cathect some of that and reduce it down to a manageable level. See.
Okay. Well, I think one of the positive things about all this
that's the mask of psychology they're dealing with. See.
One thing to unite people, to send out some of the positive vibes, is this Article 25 of the UN Charter, one of the best bits of writing ever done. After the Second World War, Article 25 is all about what people's basic needs and basic rights are. And if we could just help enforce that in Britain and America, that would be a real start, George, to get basic rights of housing, water, food for everybody. Then we can start, you know, looking at luxury goods or whatever else you need. But if a country can provide those basics, then it can start to call itself civilized again.
Well, Ravi Batra out of SMU here in Dallas, Texas, the South Southern Methodist University, has always advocated that the modern industrial system that has evolved is very efficient, and it starts overproducing very quickly. And that's why it starts experiencing layoffs and so forth. And it has it built into this new modern robotic type system is an overly efficient industrial model that creates unemployment as it progresses.
Well, unemployment is useful because it creates this pool of unemployed people that can then be played off against each other. And I mean, the problem is, I mean, we had the similar thing in the 30s here
right.
in Britain with the unemployed movement. What it does is it means that the left is going to grow and grow and grow and start coming to blows and, you know, it may be with the ruling elite. We've got this brilliant story going at the moment, George. You've probably not come across this. In Belgravia, one of the poshest bits of London, there's a whole bunch of squatters, anarchists, who've moved into a gigantic mansion owned by some Russian oligarch.
Okay.
And they've moved they got evicted from there, so they've moved into an even posher mansion worth another £2 million more.
Really?
Owned by some kind of general. So, you know, this is what's happened, is that the people are buying these big swanky flats in London. They're never even hardly visiting London. And they're just using them as an investment. So, some of the poorer people in London have gotten together. And they just said, well, we're going to squat these houses. We're going to live in them. Why not? And in fact, on the, I don't know if it was on the news or in the Evening Standard, the London paper, one of them was saying, look, I mean, every place we've been in over the last few weeks has been posher than the one before. Before long, we're going to be in Buckingham Palace.
Well, I can see somebody driving up to Buckingham Palace on a bicycle and saying, well, take my bicycle and could you put it in the garage, please? Oh, man. Hey, Tony, it was great talking with you.
Okay,
and
George.
You're always coming up with diamonds in the septic tank. What did you say?
Diamonds in the cesspool.
In the cesspool. Okay. Right. Diamonds in the cesspool. Thank you, Tony.
And if you want that, you can go to thisweek.org.uk. You'll find our list there, which has actually got some brilliant news sites.
I'll put that up with this conversation, this interview, okay?
So switch off the mainstream media and get on to our Diamonds in the Cesspool website.
Diamonds in the Cesspool, a brand new idea by Tony Gosley. Okay.
Thanks, George. Cheers, George. Bye.
Bye-bye.